Awesome. Well, welcome everybody. This is another episode of the Reputation Igniter podcast here and on our YouTube channel. We're excited with you to be with us today. I'm going to be interviewing Pete Ramsey. Pete, thanks for being here.
Chris, appreciate you having me. Excited to be here.
Of course. And you know what we do here at Reputation Igniter is we are just trying to help HVAC and plumbing companies really build an incredible, unforgettable reputation both offline and online. And what we focus on mainly, I would say, is how do we elevate that customer experience for our customers in a way that we truly become unforgettable and our word of mouth catches fire and spreads like crazy. And so always bringing on new guests. And if you've got somebody you think that should be on here, please feel free to email, direct message me, whatever. We're always trying to bring industry experts on because I think there's so many aspects that touch the customer experience. And that's why I'm really excited to have Pete on here. He is an HVAC business coach and consultant. He has helped numerous businesses over the last couple of years really just elevate their business processes. He actually started out with his own HVAC company, had it for about 10 plus years, kind of switched to the manufacturing side, has kind of run it from all angles, really. And that's why I think Pete just has such an interesting insight into all the machinations and the components that go into having a successful business. And so, Pete, I've asked you on here to give us some insight into sharing, you know, what really kind of makes a HVAC company run and hum. And maybe you can kind of talk maybe about maybe some of the challenges that you typically see when a client is kind of coming to you. Because I think the important thing for a lot of our listeners is understanding that they're not in this alone and that their situation and what they're experiencing is actually pretty similar and it's not just unique to them. So maybe you can kind of touch on some of the things that, you know, your clients, when they come to you, what is usually the sticking point or the biggest challenge or obstacle kind of, you know, facing them? What would you say that would be?
Yeah, Chris, you opened up several good questions there, good points there that we could elaborate on. First of all, let me say that reputation is everything. And what you have chosen, Chris, is so needed. I mean, I think that we business owners understand that more and more when we look at things like Google reviews. But in a day of just marketing overwhelm, when that third party validates you and speaks well of you, it's a form of approval from somebody else and not me telling you that I'm so good, but other people doing that. In fact, I'm so in harmony with that. I don't know if you can see, but my slogan used to be reputation by design. And it's since evolved. I think we're calling it here more customers, more better customers. But essentially, it's the same focus. If we don't have a reputation in our marketplace that is a positive one, number one, but secondly, encourages other people to talk about you and recommend you, then we are really working uphill. We're fighting an uphill battle. But I began in the Army. They trained me for heating and air conditioning. I was U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, Fort Belvoir, Virginia, long, long time ago, and came in as a service technician in Dallas, Texas, back in 1985 was my first civilian job. So yeah, worked several jobs, what have you. And when I did start my business, that's when the real education began. So the number one challenge initially is mindset. It's a real challenge for a lot of business owners because we're going from employee and consumer mindset, having to transition into employer and I would say business owner mindset. Now, we talk about the three levels of being dependent on your boss and a job and being independent. And that mindset, it requires a lot of trial and error. We make a lot of mistakes. Right. But at some point, we're going to evolve up to the next level we call interdependence. And I know you're aware of this, but that's when we lean on other people. And that's what you're talking about, coaches or marketing experts or professionals that we can hire out instead of trying to figure this out for ourselves and really become that much more powerful through what in the business world they call synergy, right? One plus one equals not two, but three or four or more, right? So that's what it's all about is taking it to that next level. But those initial stages are a real lesson, and a lot of mistakes are generally made, a lot of times unnecessarily.
Yeah. Well, Pete, I love what you're talking about there, because I think sometimes we're trying to fix something we're trying to fix the symptom and not the actual underlying illness, right? And that's where a lot of business owners just in general, and at least in the marketing world, right, we always call it shiny object syndrome, right? And I think that goes for any entrepreneur. We're always chasing that kind of next shiny thing, number one, because I think we're innovative, right? But I think the other component there is that, we're looking to solve problems. We're looking to solve them as quickly as possible. So I think it's done out of, from a good place, but I think it can often lead to, chasing down a lot of different things. And I think it's cool. I didn't even realize, your new slogan, more customers, better customers. Mine for years, and kind of in the process of rebranding and changing, was more reviews, more customers. So it's kind of, that idea, like you're saying, is like the importance of that third party validation. And, it's great that you think well of yourself, and it's great that maybe your customers think that, but unless it's out there, right, and it's working for you, then it's not necessarily going to generate any traction from that standpoint of kind of moving in that realm. So maybe you can, I know you've got this amazing process, and it's got these, different components to it. And I was hoping that maybe you could share a little bit about that framework, because I think just the way that you've kind of laid that out can be very helpful for, HVAC or plumbing company business owner to kind of go, hey, what should I be targeting, or where maybe potentially do I have some weak points or some sticking points? And so maybe if you can just kind of give a little bit of an overview, obviously not going too much into the weeds, and definitely not asking you to sell your secret sauce or share your secret sauce. I know you've got an awesome 90-day boot camp and all this kind of stuff that really helps, but maybe just kind of talking to those components in a way that might help shed some light on maybe where some kind of...
I'll lay the groundwork with a quick story. When I sold my business in the year 2000, and I went to work for Lennox Industries, and Lennox moved me around over the years. I was with them for about 13 years. And the first place they moved me was to the eastern part of North Carolina. And I was out there giving a class, not presenting it, but I was actually a territory manager during that time. And I called all of the Lennox dealers in the area to come in for these financial trainings. And there was a gentleman, he's retired now. His name was Wayne Adkins, and he's done some of the best work out there. I don't know if he's out there on YouTube or anything, but he's retired now. I know that. And long story short, we brought all of our dealers in, and he taught them how to understand their numbers, their finances, and then how to take those numbers and what their actual costs are and use formulas and whatnot in order to present accurate pricing for their customers, right? What should they be charging for service? What should they be charging for replacement on installation? And there was a guy there by the name of Conrad. I'm not going to say his last name because he may still be in business out there. It's been a long time ago, but Conrad was just the nicest guy. And Conrad says to me, he says, Pete, this class was fantastic. I've got to raise my prices. I didn't know, but I've been underselling for a long time. I'm raising my prices. And, that's what you want to hear when you're trying to help other businesses and understand, what's holding them back and things like this. So understanding your numbers, number one, is fundamental to your business success. But then about a week later, he calls back and he says, Pete, I've got to drop my prices. And I said, Conrad, what's wrong? He says, I raised my prices and nobody will pay what I'm trying to sell for. And what he may not have realized, but fundamentally, he was selling and working and earning customers' business based on his price. In other words, he had a premium product and he was able to install it less than the other companies or certainly at the bottom end. And what he didn't have was the ability to build the value. So it's one thing to understand your numbers, but it's another thing in order to be able to market in a way. And marketing, by the way, is greater than advertising. Advertising is a subset. Marketing is everything we do in this brand in order to create that impression, that opinion from, and this is all, it's all subject to individuals' perception, but his ability to basically create value in the customer's eyes to do business with him. And so that was part of my struggle as well. And I learned a lot back during my 10 years, but that's where the name HVAC greatness come from. It's not that I'm great. What I'm trying to share with so many of my customers that are really doing good work, they're taking the time, they're doing a proper assessment of the structure, they're interviewing the customer and they're finding out what their individual needs are. They're designing systems that are accurate, or I should say appropriate for the application as well as the people who live there and what their situations are. And so they do this wonderful job, but then the customers don't perceive that because they have a consumer mindset that has been trained by product-based marketing. And here we are in a service. And so it's not quite the same, and not everybody understands that. And so the challenge become is, how do I communicate that I am better? And so we speak to the logical mind. And unfortunately, human beings make business purchases, or they make purchases, generally speaking, and major decisions based on emotion. Money is very emotional. And until we learn how to get into some of the emotions, that becomes the issue. So the whole idea was, how do we, first of all, we have to know our prices, but how do we charge more and justify all the extra things that we do? Maybe we can pay our employees better. We can send them to training. We can choose better materials and supplies, take a little bit more time, do a little bit better job, and actually charge for that and get compensated appropriately. But as long as the consumer perceives you as the same as everybody else, in other words, your competition is quoting the exact same model as you and you want $1,000 more, I'm sorry, I can't justify that. I'm going to have to go with the lesser price. Right? So this comes from that mindset of get three bids and go with the cheapest bid. But the consumer is not a contractor. They don't have an engineer on staff that's done the design work or did product selection, things like this. They're allowing that little contractor to be the engineer, be the architect, do all the design work and do the duct assessment. Is it getting the proper airflow, or is the air distribution proper? Is this going to create issues for the new system? All these different things. And what do these contractors generally do? They pull out a 3-ton and they throw a 3-ton right back in, regardless of the fact that engineering's change, refrigerants have changed, it changes static pressure issue, all these technical challenges that could come as a consequence. They're basically supporting the ignorance in general of the consumer who just don't know any better. And so what we have to do is not only create this type of an elevation in terms of the perception, but it has to be throughout the process, and we have to be able to do it in a way that it triggers that emotion that people, you ever buy a new car or a lot of guys out there, new truck. For me, it was a new truck. I'll never forget 1996, a long time ago, showing my age, brand new Z71 Silverado right off the showroom floor, extended cab, four-wheel drive. You could just push the little button and it would go into four-wheel drive instead of having it. So it was beautiful. I justified that with all kinds of logical reasons. What's the business write-off, right? And I can use it. I've got a trailer hitch on the back. I can pull the trailer for the company. I had all types of just logical justifications, but that was an emotional buy. And I guarantee we all do that. Many times it's on things that we enjoy, right? Like vacations or trucks and vehicles. Yeah. But it's also just as important on things that maybe we don't enjoy, like replacing our roof or our heating and air conditioning or plumbing or rewiring the house, but it's still emotional nonetheless. And so this process is based on building something that means something to somebody. And I think it was in politics that they said that if you try to get everybody to like you, nobody will. I think if in business, if we try to appeal to everybody, we really won't have a strong appeal to anybody.
Yeah.
I think we need to come into our own and decide who we're going to be and what part of the market are we going to own, and Who is that going to appeal to, right? There's different types of customers out there, and we don't want them all. So what do those premium customers look like? What are they looking for? What do they respond to? What are their emotional triggers? This is from a book, if you haven't read this, 7 Triggers to Yes. And I can't remember the author's name. Really good book. It talks about the 7 triggers, which is step 4 in our process, where once we have the fundamentals in place, we learn what those triggers are. And we learn what makes people naturally respond. And so we build those into the physical processes so that we don't have to teach some everybody to be salespeople. They just follow a process that automatically triggers those emotional responses and it just feels right. Right. So that is part of the process. But yeah, I think I can screen share, right? Did you let me do that? Just a quick view to the way that I've put it together. It's basically three tiers, and there's three steps per tier. But people generally are looking at step 9. I want to grow my business, right? And a lot of times they think they can do that by level 8. I want to sell better. Where's a good sales class? And or I want to send my service technicians out to let them raise their average tickets. Right. But all of this is based on a brand that is extremely powerful. Right. So I learned this back when I switched companies from working for Lennox to working for Goodman. And here's what I discovered. I was working for Lennox. I was in Florida at the time. And we had all these premium customers and they knew Pete. They liked Pete. You know, we worked well together. But what happened was after 13 years, I made a change. I went to work for a York distributor really briefly. I didn't like it. And so I was kind of figuring out what I wanted to do. And Goodman reached out. They pursued me and they offered some pretty good money. And I was like, you know, I could work for Goodman because they've come a long way. Back when I was a dealer, it was Janitrol. We call it Junkatrol and GMC and some of these other brands. But it had developed into something. And Daikin hadn't bought them yet, but they were still. They bought a Manna and they were doing a lot of good things. And so I went to work for them. And so I went back to my Lennox dealers that I had those great relationships with. And guess what happened? They really weren't interested. They're like, Pete, we love you, but we're a premium product brand here. You know, this is, you know, we can sell you some pieces here and there, but this is what we feature. And what I discovered was that when I changed customer types and I got away from the premium dealers and I went for these dealers that were much more abundant and they did things like apartment renovations or even house remodels or just basic change outs for really people on a tight budget and things like this. They moved a lot of equipment. I sold more equipment in Goodman than I ever did with Lennox because it was a different customer, different mindset. They wanted a different thing for different reasons. And it's the same with your customers. Not everybody can afford you and you don't want to work with everybody. You have to figure out who your ideal customer avatar is, what makes them tick, both intellectually and the big one is emotionally, and build something that not only is appealing to them, but it's also a part of an extension of who you are, right? Because you don't want to climb the ladder to success, get all the way to the top just to find out it was leaning on the wrong building. You want to lay it on the right building to begin with. You know what? You want to think to yourself, when I grow this thing, reverse engineer, this is what I want to become. And so all of this is strategy. I thought good quality work, my customers love me because they were all smiling at me and they were all friendly. And I didn't learn until later that they were friendly because they knew how to get the best I had to offer out of them because I was actually, they were at my mercy in a number of ways. What was I going to charge them or was I going to do a good work or was I going to cut corners, right? And so people are friendly for more reasons than just they like you. And so that was part. There's a lot of moving parts here, Chris, and there's a lot going on. And the psychology of the success, if you build that into the structure, your success is much greater. But to elaborate on that briefly, switching it back on here, sorry. In order to do an awesome sales, let's say you hire a new salesperson and your attitude is, well, I'm paying that salesperson a lot of money. They need to earn that extra 8% or whatever my commission is. But if you don't give them something awesome to sell, how successful can they be? Right. When I was selling, I'm trying to sell premium products to Goodman dealers, it didn't work. And when I was trying to sell Goodman products to let's say Lennox dealers, it didn't work. So there were these things had to be in place. But before we could even get to that, we had to have that X factor, that thing that's different, that thing that penetrates at the emotional level. And before we can even start there, we have to know who we're going after, your ultimate customer avatar, What about you is drawing them, and how can we enhance that, and how can we differentiate that? And that is your unique and irresistible you. This is the kind of person and company that you need to be in order to attract more of these awesome customers. And a lot of times this is polarizing, meaning you're going to turn away people who don't appreciate the premium if you're a premium dealer, right? Because these people do, even in a down economy, especially in a down economy. And then the big step after that is you have to create a culture with and hire people who share the same values that both of these do, so that they're a natural fit. And I'm telling you, if you've ever hired a technician just based on experience, and he brings those attitudes and all that baggage in and just ruins your culture, you know what I'm talking about. You have to hire people who, you know, they love this culture. They love, you know, let's say that our mission is we're the best, we're the green, low carbon footprint experts of our market, right? We're the ones you come to. And so our values are professionalism, top-notch work, caring, good communications, right? Honesty and integrity and technical excellence, superior. So if those are our values and our customers love that, and then we hire people that just want to make money. I just want to make that money, right? Or I just want to, I got jujitsu class at 6 o'clock. I got to go, right? I'm out of here. It's 4:30, right? So they're not really caring about, you know, beyond the money and the paycheck and the job. Then you've got a misalignment, right? And at that fundamental level, everything's built on that. Right customer, the right you, and the right team, where all that fits naturally. And then you can build on that. Right? When we get into the X factor section, that's the psychology. That's those triggers. How do we put those in all of our customer touch points? A touch point is every interaction with the customer, right? And how do we get the emotional connection? Emotional connection is what keeps them coming back. That's where loyalty comes from. So All of this stuff we do naturally a lot of times, and then we just tell our employees, well, go do what, just go do it, right? Just go figure it out. And they can't, the customers want you back. They don't want your employees. That's why, right? Because you don't have that stuff together, right? So that's kind of an overview, oversimplistic way, but we've got it broken down, been through this a bunch of times so that we can take people through that. And then all of a sudden, all boats float on that rising tide. Your service sales, your installation sales, your maintenance renewals, the referrals, the big one, mm-hmm. right? Because people of a feather flock together, and you are an extension of them. Chris, I saw a guy's van. I was working with an artist, a creative artist, and we were looking at doing a redesign for this guy's wrap. I work with a guy. Phenomenal. And so we're looking at some ideas, and there was a van out there, and it was hilarious. It was a plumber, and you know how they had the plumber's cleavage with the butt cheeks kind mm-hmm. of thing. So yeah. On the side of the van, there's this guy's butt cheeks as he's bending over and he's working, and it was something plumbing. It was funny. It was really legitimately funny. And we were laughing at it, but then I remembered, you know, I said that to myself. I know I said it to the two gentlemen on the call. I said, you know, as funny as that is, and as good as it does, it gets in getting our attention, you wouldn't see that truck parked in front of my house, right? Because that's an extension of me.
Yeah.
And people of means are that way, especially. And so you may have a really funny rap or whatever, but they don't want that sitting in their driveway. This is the same type of people. And I'm speaking to those way up there, but there's a lot of people, they go to overly priced restaurants and pay way too much money for a piece of steak and, you know, and a mashed potato or what have you, just to be seen by their peers, just to be shown, you know, just as, you know, oh, you know, I eat at this fancy place. I guarantee you when that vehicle is sitting in front of their driveway, it's an extension of them, and they want the premium company sitting in their driveway because their neighbors need to know, just like in that restaurant, they need to know that, you know, we deal with the best. And oh, by the way, employees are consumers too, and they are attracted to the same thing that consumers are. High-end appearance. And you don't have to be the biggest company to do this.
Yeah,
you just have to have all your ducks in a row and put something together that is worth recommending to everybody else. right? And it doesn't stop at that first image. It's through the entire process. It's the customer experience. And that's why we take it internal, because we're HVAC experts, right? I've been on those calls. I've got those scars. I've got those burns. I breathe the phosgene gas, right? So I understand exactly what's going on. And we made those improvements. We made those mistakes, right? Growth comes from a lot of mistakes. Anyway, I got on a tangent there, Chris. I'm sorry.
No, I love it. I think what's interesting, because the way we kind of started the podcast is, they're like, it's really simple. Usually the issues, the main issues or challenges of an HVAC contractor or plumbing contractor is really it's the mindset, which I think you could say is, probably relevant for every entrepreneur. Everybody. Right. Like we're, new levels, new devils, that whole sort of thing. Right. And then what I love is we then go to the other side. Right. And we look at the 9-step process. And I think it's easy to kind of get intimidated and go, oh, my gosh, like I can't do that. And I think, not getting overwhelmed by a 9-step process, but realizing that, yeah, you can be in the shower all morning going, it's just my attitude. And like, I just got to like, be more positive and they're going to like me for that. And I can charge more. And like you said, most people start at the end, which is, You should always start with the end in mind. Right. But I think it's going in there and being like, coming out of, like a boot camp or whatever, with you, and then going, I need to raise my prices. Yeah, great. Okay. But let's not just say, and this is obviously an over-exaggeration, just add a zero, at the end of every hourly rate. Like, and that's not obviously what you're saying and what we'd encourage, but, I think it's easy to go there and just be like, yeah, well, people are just going to want to pay more, but that's not how it works. And to your point about the mindset is like, yeah, but that mindset's got to bleed into everything. And you really have to codify all of your systems and processes. Now, this doesn't need to take, 10 years to get there per se. Right. But it's thinking through the process of how do I, and I think you said this when we were talking earlier, is just like, it's that idea of like improving every customer touch point by 1% really increases the entire customer experience. Yeah. And I think in the process of educating your employees as to what's changed or what's behind all of this, right? Not the, hey, we're raising our rates, right? Because your salespeople go, well, oh, phooey. Now it's going to be way harder for me. Instead, having the whole organization understanding how you guys are elevating the customer service or just making them aware of what you guys do from start to finish, I think causes an internal shift for every one of your employees to realize like the quality and the value that they're already bringing. Number one, right? Which I think is an easy way to, raise prices, slightly. If everybody knows the value behind what they're bringing. And then the other piece that you're talking about is it's not just at the end when you hand them the invoice, but it's from, their first impression of you, whether or not that is, whether that happens from them seeing a vehicle wrap, right? Or it's they got the referral via word of mouth, they went and they Googled you, what did they see? Is that congruent and aligned with, what they thought? And then the next step is like, okay, great, you look great online, your customer said something good about you, but how do you answer the phone? Like, what are your dispatchers saying, right? Are they gruff and short? Or are they telling you, can you get on hold and we'll get with you shortly? Are you getting to an answering service that's just a little bit like out to lunch and aloof, like they feel like, oh, I'm just getting lost in the shuffle? Or do they feel like there's a tight cohesiveness to your entire process? Because I would almost say that it's almost the seamlessness with which you deliver this sort of 9-step, process that you have. I think that's what conveys to a client that like, hey, they answer my phone call within a few rings. They were pleasant to deal with. They were accommodating and scheduling, right? And just because you're super busy doesn't mean you can't be accommodating, right? It's just your approach to it. Like, oh, like, let's try and fit you in. Like just having the verbiage there. Then, was the salesperson like overly pushy, right? How was the tech when they showed up, right? Were they incongruent with everything else? Were they sloppy? Did they have their uniform on? Was it in good shape? Did they greet you? Did they put the, shoe covers on? Like whatever the case may be that you're trying to, convey that image. And I think also what was great about what you just shared too is like, hey, you don't like, I think a lot of people when they hear us sharing stuff like this, it's always aimed at like, how do you become a premium brand? That's not what you're saying, Pete. You're saying, hey, what is it? The ultimate customer avatar, I think, is what you used, right? Like, what is it at the ultimate customer avatar? Because maybe you don't like going into the rich houses and they just, it's just a whole bunch of like, you know, stuff that I don't want to deal with. But you could be that affordable volume, you know, company, and that's okay, right? That's a niche that needs to be served, right? So just, I love what you're talking about, because like all of that matters and each piece matters. And I think, you know, we can over obsess about one of them, or we could, you know, just not start trying on any of them. But it's like, it's a process over time of improving each one of those with the underlying mindset of, hey, how do we elevate this 1%? So I thought that was really powerful the way you shared. So I appreciate that.
So many points. I was trying to make a couple of notes I won't forget, but dude, excellent points. First of all, you alluded to that 1%. That was on our prior conversation. It's not recorded here, so I'll throw that in there. And we were referring to a book. It was written, and I don't know his name, back in the 90s. It was the CEO of Southwest Airlines. And at that time, when airlines had really good customer service, Southwest was crushing it. Everybody wanted to do business with them. And when interviewed, the CEO was asked, what is it about Southwest that is so much better than all the other airlines? He said, nothing. He said, we're not so much better at anything, but what we are is we're at least 1% better on every customer touch point, the way they're spoken to, their seating, the amount of peanuts they get, right? Everything was considered. So the touch point became really important to building this momentum into an overall feeling of, oh my goodness. And it's similar in our touch points. And that's what we're talking about here on the different elements. So we build that in. But you made a very good point on, you need to go through all 9 steps. And oh my gosh, this, that, and the other. Any heating and air conditioning business that's been in business for any time, they've got all of that stuff working. At various degrees, but are they synchronized and are they optimized? Yeah. And so what we do is we go back to the basics and revisit, and we actually do a deep dive. We look at your reviews and we see exactly what it is that your current customers are appreciating about you. And we compare that to what the premium companies in the country, what the high achievers are actually doing. And you're going to see a difference. You're going to see that you're having a different type of people appreciating different things than these are. Now, you may have different goals. Your ultimate customer avatar may be different than just what zip code they live in. And I think it should be. I think that fundamentally we want to be appreciated for what we do, but for the right reasons. And you know, being, you know, the shiniest vehicle in the neighborhood, that's nice and everything else, but being there for the right reasons is really important too. So I like that clarification. I think that's an excellent point, because you don't, if you've been in business, we go through some of this stuff pretty quick, but inevitably there are some places we got to stop and we got to dig in and restructure some things so that we can get this baby optimized and get it flowing again. And so each company's different, right? One company has their strengths and others have their strengths. But the other piece on that mindset that you talked about, and I alluded to that initially, most of the people that I come in contact with, business owners, they've left that dependence and they're independent, right? They're self-employed.
Yeah.
Right? They make decisions for themselves. And what they've learned to do is to think for themselves, make that decision. And what happens is it works out. They have success and they make another decision and they have success. And if we're not careful, we become overconfident in our own opinions. Now, your opinions are important, but if we're not careful, we think we know better than others who have better experience and better insights. And so that's where the humility must circle back around. And you need that confidence, okay? But we don't want it to tip over into arrogance. If you are stuck at that, you're stuck at the self-employed level. You're not ready for entrepreneurship. You work for yourself. You're a contractor, right? But if you want to be a retail enterprise that you can scale, you have to creep over into interdependence, right? And depending on other people and bring in some other opinions in, humbling yourself, opening your mind to the possibility, maybe it's different than my perception of, I just need better marketing and I just need good employees. You line me up plenty of work and get me some good people to work with, I'm going to make this work. But I'm here to tell you, neither one of those is going to happen until you get this stuff handled. It's just not going to work. I know, I've tried. I've got the scars. I've been there. I am most qualified to sit in this seat because I've made the most mistakes.
Yeah.
Right. So how do successes come? You make all the mistakes. And, you know, my son, he just started his business. I think I mentioned that to you very recently. And I didn't even want him in heating and air. It's a funny story, but, you know, when he went to college and everything else, I'd sold my business because I thought, you know, I want my son to be better than me. And goes back full circle. He's just like his old man. He'd rather work with his hands than sit behind some desk and, you know, God bless him for that. Right. Cause that's what we need. And there's something about that, but anyway, you know, he's having to go through these steps as well. And so a lot of the, it's pretty frustrating because I'm having these same conversations, and the closer you are to somebody, the harder it is sometimes. But he is making that transition. He's getting into that independence and he's wanting to make these decisions. And I'm like, son, you know, this is going to bite you, you know, be careful. He does it. And then he comes back and it just happens. We just have to learn that. I think that's the reason business books and reading these are so important. And I know you're very well read in a lot of business books. We take what these other people have learned and we introduce that into our lives. I guarantee you this whole process, it's written with several major books blended in. I didn't invent all this stuff. I just put it all together. What I have was the insights from the inside and all the mistakes to put this thing together so that it makes sense. And it really, really makes a difference. When you're out there, you go to the sales class and you're selling a rock star identity, it makes sales a lot easier. It's easier to build that value. It's easier to get away from that price conversation and get over into what is it that you want? What is it that you need? What do we need to do in order to accomplish that? And then we start pressing those emotional triggers and then we're getting different results. But all good points, Chris. The one percenters and then I don't need that. And maybe you do, maybe you don't. But I have yet to see a company that I've worked with, at least, a lot of them think they have this, you know, they have this handled. Most of them don't. Yeah. And you just have to put it through the test to see. You know, we all need a little room for a little improvement. When I did sales training and when I worked for Linux for a while, and I remember we had some of the biggest companies, most successful companies in the nation sitting. So they're salespeople. They're award-winning salespeople sitting in training. And it was intimidating for me because I remember teaching a class and always in the front row were the very best salespeople from the biggest companies. They're right up front. They're looking for one nugget. They're looking for one little thing that's going to help them, right? So here's the best of the best humbling themselves, and they're looking to grow even more. And that's the attitude I think that we need, especially given what we're facing in these new markets that we're getting ready to come in, this new economy. It's going to get kind of interesting, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, and I like what you said there too, just about the idea that, because I think that's another piece, right? It's like, we think we got to create these nine steps. What you're saying is that really kind of by default, maybe you've already got these in your business, right? They're already there. Like, you wouldn't have a working HVAC company if you didn't have these nine components. What you're saying though is going back and being intentional about each one of these nine components, because when you first started off and you were self-employed, you just sort of did what needed to get done, right? But now as you're going from, you know, independent, being interdependent, right? And really leaning on your team, you need to convey and, you know, share those ideals and your core values, like through all of that stuff. I think that's powerful, right? So it's like, you know, you already have these. It's just, how do you make each one of these, by intentionality and being purposeful about what you're doing, how do you elevate those? And then the other thing I think you were talking to, and I, you know, you hear this all the time, right? Is, you know, by defining your customer avatar, your ultimate customer avatar, and being willing to service them and realize that that's going to say no to some business. I think this is always like, you know, it's that scarcity mindset of like, if I say no to it, then I'm losing money. In actuality, you know, and maybe you can talk to this, you know, for just a minute, is that in serving your customer avatar, not only are you happier, not only are your salespeople more delighted to serve with them because they're in alignment and congruent, not only are your technicians, you know, more engaged in the process, right? The dispatchers know who they're answering, right? but you start to almost weed those people out on the front end. So you're not even getting calls from the people that aren't a fit, but you will, just because, you know, those people will come in, your systems, your processes will already filter them out. But as a result, not only will you become more profitable because that's somebody that you know how to serve and you serve them better, right? But then on top of that, you create efficiencies in your business because you're not trying to do some sort of, you know, custom or tailored or bespoke sort of approach for each person. And there's that friction of constantly, you know, revamping or, you know, readjusting things. So like in that process itself, you create efficiencies, which creates profitability. So in a way, sometimes you don't even need to actually raise your price. You become more profitable simply because you're creating better templates or your processes or flat pricing, whatever kind of approach you're using to kind of cater to that ultimate customer avatar. You create efficiencies in your business, which creates profitability in and of itself. And then when you go to raise prices, you are even more profitable, which is kind of an exciting thing. So, but yeah, maybe, you know, what have you seen in that realm? Or maybe there's something that somebody could think about, or, you know, a question they could pose to themselves of their business, or maybe somebody in their, you know, one of their employees that you think that could create some impact. Cause I know kind of your initial sort of like impact on the business is like they can become, you know, 2 to 10 times more profitable in a short period of time. Maybe there's something in particular that, you know, is a hot button. I don't know. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I know. Great stuff. I'm trying to keep track of several, but the one, that last one was particularly good. So, we call this dog whisper marketing. Dog whistle marketing. I'll get it right here.
Dog whistle.
Okay, about the horse whisper. Dog whistle. Marketing. Okay. So when you blow a dog whistle, it sounds like this. You and I don't hear that because it wasn't, right. It wasn't for us. Yep. But when you learn to market in a way that the people you're not talking to don't hear it, but it speaks really to that dog, right? Not just that dog, all the dogs in the neighborhood, rawr, 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 they're coming to respond. That's where it's at. And so here's an example. Let's say I had a course that was how to sell anything to anybody by Pete Ramsey. And I'll charge you $1,000 how to sell anything to anybody. Yeah. I'll guarantee if I put that out there, I'm going to get crickets. Nobody's going to buy. Maybe I'd get lucky and get one. Well, let's say that I say, okay, how to sell to people in my local community. I don't know how much response I'll get on that. How to sell to people in my local community, the trades. Right. Or how to make more sales in my local community as an HVAC contractor between the age of 3 years in business and 10 years business, and at about the employee level of, let's say, you know, 5 to 6 employees up to 12 to 14 revenues of, you know, between $2 million and $6 million in total revenues with absolute success. You know, right. The more specific I get for $1,000, I'm telling you, people are going to respond because that's speaking right to you. You're going to buy something that speaks exactly to your situation and what you are. At least you're going to be interested, right? Maybe you don't want to pay that $1,000. Maybe you want a little taste first to see if this guy really knows what he's talking about. But if you're selling specifically to that, that's the way it works, right? So if you're selling a weight loss program for me, and it's designed of people in their 50s who have sedentary jobs and work behind desks all the time, and you're right. So if I had a program just for that, I may respond. Why should your customers be any different?
They should.
Right. So here's our strategy. We digital agency, marketing agency, go make my phone ring. Anybody and everybody with a heating and air conditioning unit or issue, call me. So you get window unit phone calls. You get people that don't have any money. You get people that they were just tire kickers. They're not ready to buy. So you pay all this money for all these leads, and the marketing agency is like, hey, I got you the leads. I did my job. You know, you have to convert them, right? And there you are frustrated. They're crappy leads. Where did you market, right? So, well, I market over in the nickel dime saver, and here you are, a premium product, right? There's all these different things. So we have to take responsibility of our marketing strategy, create that, come up with an identity. And by the way, heating and air conditioning brands are the worst ever. So don't ask any heating air guys what would you recommend on a company name? My son was saying the same thing. Well, Dad, I just want to name it Ramsey Heating and Air. That's what you called it, right? Back, because I didn't know any better. And I said, don't do that, son. Don't do that. We're looking for something deeper, something that just at the name, it means something. Did you know that certain names are very easy to forget and others are very hard to forget? Mm-hmm. So, if you ever, or there's the, we talked about this on our conversation offline, the reticular activating system, that part of your brain that, you know, that song gets it stuck in your head. You can't forget it. It's just in there. It's in there. That's a repetition of sound. That's why that song that you like, right? But that's why you hear companies like Best Buy. It's a repetitive. Circuit City, Bed Bath and Beyond, right? Yeah. Coca-Cola, or maybe Air Care and Repair, or Air Repair. So there's some companies out there that have done that. So that's an example of putting a little bit of time and thought into the name so that it has staying power. But you can make any name successful. I remember working for a company, or I was selling to a company. It was called Sealore. And I said, Sealore? Well, it was spelled with an X, Sealore. I said, what the heck is a Z-Lore? He says, Rolex spelled backwards. So to him, that was a cool, clever thing, right? Or if it's you with your acronym, right? The first initial of all three of your children, RTK, Heating and Air, and it's clever for you. It's never about you. I mean, it is, but it isn't about you. It's about what customers will respond to. So forget about everybody's opinion. Find out what your very best customers want. Find out how to market to them on that emotional level. Find out what that dog whistle marketing is and build an identity around the strategy, not a strategy around the identity.
Yeah.
And that's what we do. And it's harder that way. It doesn't have to be that hard. Sure. So getting that dialed in is really important, especially going into tougher times. It's getting ready to get competitive, guys. And you don't want to be in that price conversation. You don't want to be in that group because that is a race. It's gonna get interesting. I've got some very interesting thoughts and theories on that. But in the meantime, what old school, like these gurus that have opened up these really big businesses in these big markets and they're sold their business for, you know, 30, 40, 50 million, you can't compare yourself to them. You know, they're in a different market. They started the business at a different time. They had a different customer. Let's just say demographic, right? You have to look at your demographics. Where are the opportunities in your market? Right? How many? What's the population? What's the average income? Where do these different people live? Should you start a business in that area? Should you relocate the business that you have? You know, I didn't know that. I did everything wrong. I started a business in the wrong part of town, and you know, it took me a long time. It took me 10 years to get to 14 employees. 10 years.
Yeah.
And it didn't have to be that hard, but you know, lots of mistakes to be made. There's a lot of stuff going on. Stop being independent, become interdependent, and take time, Stephen Covey, and sharpen the saw. If you don't know what that means, read the 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. You got to be sharpening your saw. And that's where success comes from. And it's a lot easier to say it than to do it, but it's that consistency, right? Just doing it every day. And it's that cumulative effect that ultimately gives you the success that you want. Before you know it, the phones start ringing more and it's more of the right people. And then you get better applicants coming at your door looking for a job and all this stuff starts to happen. But it's not a quick fix. None of it. Anything worth accomplishing takes effort, right? You want big muscles. You got to get the pain in order to get the gain. You know, no pain, no gain. And it's a universal truth, right? But work smart and work hard, I say. But work smart.
So, Pete, as we're kind of like wrapping up here, and I know this might be a big question, that's why I'm asking it early here. But, you know, for you, obviously, you know, seeing the industry from kind of multiple sides, you know, now in the coaching space and kind of getting maybe a lay of the land more sort of, when I say universally, I mean, kind of like across the country, right? You know, and again, you don't have a crystal ball, obviously, about what's going to happen, right? But you'd shared some kind of ideas about, you know, what's going to happen as maybe the economy starts to kind of slow down. And, you know, when that happens, nobody knows per se, but you know, how might a business, you know, given what we've been talking about, where might they kind of start, or what are some maybe some key cornerstone things that they should be thinking about as we're heading into this kind of new era, right? I mean, HVAC is growing by whatever, 3 or 6% every single year, right? So it's a very, there's some very rosy stats out there, but I think there's also some hard or harsh realities that are facing our industry. What would you say if somebody's going to try and quote unquote, maybe prepare themselves for what's ahead, or maybe not even preparing, maybe they've got a good system. They've got good employees. They've got, you know, a good reputation, all these kind of things. Maybe that's all locked in, but maybe helping them, you know, see a little bit further into the future as to like what is going to happen, just so that they're not surprised by it. Or they could say, well, that was one of the multiple options that could have happened. So I've already kind of prepared, you know, maybe mentally and the business, you know, you'd shared some things. So maybe you can kind of talk to a little of that as we're kind of like closing out here.
Excellent question. I'll throw just a few things in there to consider, because I think that if we could look 5 years into the, just say 3 years into the future, the way things are headed, I think we're going to see probably more unemployment than we've ever seen before.
Mm-hmm.
I think the Great Depression was 25% unemployment. And those were tough times. But I was listening to an investor guy talking about his mother-in-law. And long story short, she was a little girl during that terrible time. And she says, well, but for us, it was pretty normal. I mean, there was a lot of poor people, but dad had a job and we were okay. And so in spite of tough times that are coming, if you have a job and if you're in a good position, you're going to be okay, right? But you're going to be surrounded by a lot of people who aren't. Crime rate is going to go up. You need to reinforce all your vehicles with something better. I was watching a video the other day where these guys know exactly where to drill right in the sliding door, pop it open. They got your door open. You got to put something more robust in there, some alarm systems, for example. Maybe you're going to start selling features like that for customers who want to make sure their equipment doesn't get stolen, things like that. But as unemployment goes up, it's because jobs are going down and there are people who are very skilled. They're going to want to come into your industry and they're going to start off as handyman type. And they're going to say, well, I can fix that air conditioner. I can fix that furnace. And they're going to do it for nothing. And they don't have the overhead that you have. And so we're going to see more and more of that type of competition creeping in. And so there's going to be that race to the bottom. The problem with racing to the bottom, like the old saying is, what if you win, or worse yet, what if you only come in second place, right? So I thought it was kind of funny, but when I heard that, so that's just, we've got to get ourselves out of that. In order to do that, I really feel like the best position is a specialist, something that not any handyman can do, right? They don't have access to that information or that technology, or maybe the instrumentation that it requires or the tools. Like, let's say that you're Mr. Geothermal Heat Pump and you've got all the equipment to drill the holes and go down and do all this stuff. And nobody else is really set up for that. So you could kind of own that part of the market and still be in heating and air, right? So that's more product specific, but you can do it in other areas. But I've seen our trade in other countries and it does not look like ours. And guess who gets squeezed out? You, the skilled labor gets squeezed out. The people selling the equipment make their money. You know, the homeowners buy direct somehow, or they, right? So these are the kind of things we have to be thinking about. So in the future, when times are tougher, what are the people with money going to be looking for? Because they want to spend the money. They don't mind spending the money. They want to be smart. So I think what they're going to be looking for is, I don't want to waste my money, but I want to make sure I'm not risking it either. So I think I'm going to go with a company that exhibits and displays stability. And so that could mean you've been in business for a long time, and that could be a really powerful professional image. And by the way, I judge your work the same way that you judge your work. I know what superheat is. I know what subcooling is. I know what a load calculation is. I know what mastic sealing is. And I know what poor airflow is, on and on and on. Customers say he did a great job. How do you know? Well, look how clean he was. Look how well he spoke. Look how nice his vehicle. They perceive through things that are counterintuitive. They think that you're awesome because of the way you appear, the way you spoke and everything else. So with that in mind, what I would do, I would not go into debt for anything right now, except, you know how they're telling you to hoard food and gold and silver? Right. You need to hoard silver solder and R410A by the pallet, things that you know, if distribution starts to dip, you've got your staple in the barn. That I would hoard, right? But cut your overhead, keep lean. The business model is changing. What used to work once upon a time is changing. So get lean. But if you want to have, let's say, invest in your advertising 3 years from now for the most powerful advertising, just remember 3 years from now, maybe you don't have the same kind of money. But if you invested right now in an incredible strategy that manifested itself into a wrap that had dog whistle messaging on it, it was very powerful. And those vans, 3 years from now, when you don't have any money to advertise or advertising for you as you drive around, that's a good investment. That's a good investment. So getting your strategy straight, getting it out there, getting it, you know, borrow money if you have to, but get that done. You need to have the best wrap in town, 1% better than anybody in town, right? Speaking specifically to your best customers and thinking in terms of what are my best customers going to be looking for if they're having a little bit of a hard go at it, right? So thinking ahead that way, it's kind of an educated guess, but that would be my best educated guess, I think.
Yeah, I mean, and I think to your point, some of those components might manifest themselves, some might not, right? We might not see any interruption in the supply chain, and maybe there's an overload in supply, but we see crime even higher, right? So it's one of those things, like you said, you don't know which one. I think those are all fair assumptions of potentialities, right? And I think to your point, though, is what I really liked is you're talking about how it's all about how people perceive you, right? And you always hear that thing that what you're conveying to, you know, whether it's a customer or any person that you're talking to, right? Like the vast majority of it is all nonverbal, right? So I think we can get wrapped up and say, well, price is all that matters. It's like, well, it's the perception of your price is their value there, right? And that is generated based on the fact that how does somebody talk to them? You know, do they educate them and demonstrate that, you know, that knowledge that they're looking for where they feel comfortable, right? And then, you know, and does that build trust, right? And so, you know, you could be the best tech in the world, but, you know, if you show up with a dip in your mouth and, you know, dirty clothes, right, they're going to go, okay, he wasn't as good as that other guy, even though all that guy was, you know, first day on the job, but he had a clean uniform because it was his first day on the job and he was courteous and polite. And there's, like you said, there's that perception. And then for me, it's always like, well, what goes into that review, right? Like you're saying, like nobody's talking about the technicals of, you know, the engineering analysis that you did. They're talking about, you know, how did they treat the kids? Did they leave the door open and the dog got out, right? You know, all those little things that you're like, this has nothing to do with my HVAC business, right? And my quality of customer service. But in reality, it does, because it matters to your customer and they're the ones who are going to share. And, you know, one of the things that I've always, you know, the last 10 years in my agency has always talked about is like, you know, people go, well, you know, because, you know, main core of it would always be like, you know, the importance of reviews. And they'd be like, well, you know, like my business isn't really like, you know, everybody would always think like, well, I need more reviews when I need more customers. Like, well, no, you should be getting reviews when you have customers, because when you get into the rough times and customers slow, you know, like you're saying, that vehicle wrap, that reputation is going to precede you. That's going to carry you through, right? Like you're going to still see a dip just like everybody else, but that dip won't be a cavern or a crevasse that you're going over. It'll be a lot less of it'll be a smoother ride.
And you got to get the reviews for the right reasons too, Chris, because if you got the reviews because you were the best price, I guarantee you that new estimate you're going on, they know exactly what you charged that prior customer to the penny. And that's what they're looking for. You got to give them the right reason to call you. And so, and remember too, reviews again are extension of the person. If you go in and you just do this wonderful customer experience and you take care of the equipment, but you take care of the dog and the kid and the house and everything, and you're really polite and everything else. And they're impressed. And they say, wow, that is so nice. When they recommend you, they're going to feel good about recommending you because they know you're going to do that same, have that same effect on them. And the conversation that's going to follow is like, where did you find these guys? Oh my gosh, they're great. You know? And so, it's got to be for the right reasons. And remember, we fix equipment, but the person that determines whether or not we're coming back isn't the equipment. It's the owners of that equipment. It's those people, it's those human beings. And, you know, they're inside, they're little children, and you have to speak to that because you are the expert and they're at your mercy and they may act tough and everything else, but on the inside, they're terrified, right? So put them at ease, demonstrate your integrity and your professionalism and your kindness. And then, you know, that don't pay attention to the sourpuss because sometimes that's just a put on and watch. I had a lady one time, and I know we're wrapping up, that just was angry at me all the time. And I was, yes, ma'am. No. And you could have knocked me over with a feather when I go out to this guy's house and he says, you must be Pete Ramsey. I'm like, yes, sir. And he's like, such and such, you know, recommending you. And I'm like, oh my gosh, she hates me. He says, I don't know what it is you do, but she worships the ground you walk on. Good enough, right? Stay constant, continue to do what you're doing. And it's getting in there, regardless of that stone face that we encounter sometimes.
Yeah. Well, I love that. And that's another thing I always said is like, you know, you also have to ask, I think you have to be open and I think incentivizing or, you know, trying to not manipulate, but like to goad somebody into giving you a review, it's going to feel inauthentic, right? If you're like, oh, I'll give you a $5 gift card or whatever. Yeah. And I have stats for years that say that doesn't really have any, it has a almost a zero effect, if sometimes a negative effect, because people feel like their review was bought as opposed to feeling like they were just giving out of the genuineness of their own heart.
Sure. Yeah.
But, you know, even asking the sourpuss grandma, because you don't know, she might be a keyboard wizard online, so to speak. Right. So there's that aspect. And I think also just realizing and being, you know, open to the opportunity that somebody sharing a bad experience might be a golden opportunity for you to actually convey online, you know, in the public eye, you know, what kind of a customer service you actually provide and who you are at your heart. Yeah. Obviously not, you know, being combative, but being, you know, accepting, understanding and moving on and kind of evolving out of that. And then I think the other piece that's a natural extension of that, right, is, and you were talking about this, is, you know, all those components that they're thinking about, right? Cause they're scared to death because you have knowledge they don't have. So they don't actually know what's going on. Right.
Yes.
Is that, when somebody goes to refer you, because that's ultimately, you know, a review is kind of like an, you know, a referral online that's working for you 24/7, 365. But what about the actual referrals that you're getting? Like this lady who referred you to this other person. I mean, that guy's pre-sold. It doesn't matter what number is going to be on the invoice. Now, obviously you can't gouge him, right? But he's already pre-sold. So the question is that experience that she had, you know, again, she wasn't talking about, you know, her low airflow or, you know, the different metrics that you'd use to kind of determine what she needed. And instead, it was how you treated her with respect and dignity that got her to share about you. And to your story, right? You know, he didn't know what you did, but he was just like, but I want it, right? And so,
yeah.
That's the other piece, is like, how do you create a business that's so referable that your word of mouth, you know, precedes you in the best way possible. And obviously just continuing to manifest that. And, you know, that's your cheapest form of marketing kind of going forward. And I think we're, you know, most businesses, you know, I feel this because I'm in the marketing industry, like the first thing they like to cut is their marketing budget, right? Sure. I have my own thoughts on that, and that's probably for another podcast. But the idea is that you've got to be able to have something to fall back on, and usually that's your reputation. The question is how solid is that? How consistent have you been, you know, over the years building that up? And it's something you can lose overnight, but it takes years to build, right?
And one of the things you alluded to it from one book that you read. I was talking about the seven triggers. One of them is what they call the trigger of reciprocity. Which is the law of reciprocity. And when you really take care of your customers, they're going to want to talk to other people about you. So timing on asking for those reviews are really important, right? Catch them when they're at their peak. And hey, would you mind shooting that in a review? You know, I'm trying to let people know this, but you know, and know when to ask. I learned that from a 9-year-old.
Yeah.
He knew when to ask for that skateboard, right? So
right there. You got plenty of examples about how important timing is in your life, right? If you're a parent, that's for sure. You know, and I think too, to your point is that, you know, and obviously we're just kind of hitting on reviews, but even referrals, right? Like those two things should just be a natural extension of your elevated customer experience, right? It should be, you know, and I always kind of coach my clients. I'm like, hey, you know, at the beginning, like when the dispatcher, you know, answers the phone and they ask, hey, how did you hear about us? Right. You can say, you know, it's just one of those things. We like to, you know, reward those people who refer us. And so we're always trying to, you know, keep our finger on the pulse and like, oh, you know, it was Susie. And it's like, oh yeah, you know, I read Susie's review and I read a bunch of reviews and you go, you know, just conveying to them. We love it when people take the time to leave us a review. Right. Instead of being like, read all of our reviews and you'll see how great we are kind of thing. No, it's just, it's the fact that there is this like sort of mutual respect for each other, customer and the company of how important it is. And you're kind of leaving those seeds for reviews, but it's also seeds for referrals, right? As you're saying, oh, it's so great that Cindy, we love Cindy. Thank you so much for letting me know. I'm going to drop Cindy a note today or whatever. Like, just little things like that, that can keep you top of mind with, you know, your big referral sources. I was actually just finishing up a book last night, you know, always trying to up my game on how to do better referrals. And that is it. It has to be baked into your process. And it, you know, first of all, you know, at first it's gotta be kind of like a little like, you know, you got to be very cognizant of it. And then it gets that unconscious, you know, or conscious of it. And then that gets to that unconscious thing. And that's where I think you really start to build some momentum.
I agree. And I'll throw a bone your way because a big chunk of meat, actually. there's nothing any better than firsthand experience to know if you like a company service or not. But the second best thing is what we said earlier, and that's third party validation. That's a person that's non, there's no skin in the game. You know, it's not, hey, I'm Chris, I'm the best. It's Pete saying, dude, you got to call Chris. This guy, you won't believe what he could. That's where the power comes from, right? And so understanding the law, that the key, the seven triggers that emotionally people respond to, one of them is reciprocity, and that becomes the motivation for a good review is to take advantage of those and imagine having a process in place to maximize the receiving, maybe that's not the right word, the receiving of these reviews. And this is where services like you come in and make and give them the opportunity to write those reviews at the right time. And sometimes, you know, give them a little bit more time, but still, you're not going to get, just like you say, you're not going to sell anything you don't offer, and you're not going to get any reviews you don't ask for, generally, unless you at least make it as easy as possible for them to do so. So having a good strategy for that makes a lot of sense to me, you know.
Yeah. I mean, and you know, it's one of the things that we kind of talked about in our previous thing is like the importance of, you know, starting to integrate technology into your business and how that can really, you know, just lubricate so many other systems in your business. And, you know, that's what we found, you know, giving the secrets that I've found over the years is like, you know, first of all, you got to have a good core CRM that's going to kind of trigger everything, you know, making sure that it integrates with just about anything. You know, the easiest of which is like Zapier, but that's really what we build, you know, our programs off of is making sure that there's just that natural extension, that natural flow. You know, and this is one of the things we've been working on recently is like, how do we sort of automate, the flow of those referrals into a business? Because, you know, people want, at the end of the day, people want things, and this is just where we're at right now, is like things have to be so ridiculously easy, right? If you're asking them to do something hard, which is where we were 10 years ago, and we give out a card and say, hey, you know, could you type in this really long link and leave us a review there, right? It's like the idea that we thought that would actually work, and people still did it, which I thought was incredible, right? And then you move to the QR code, right? And you get people going like, what is this thing and how do I use it, right?
Yeah.
But it's one of those things that when you complete that service, something should show up in their inbox, letting them know that you care. Right. And, you know, for us, we've been kind of reverse engineering the mindset behind, like you're talking about, that law of reciprocity from Robert Cialdini's, you know, book Influence, and just like those principles of persuasion, and going, hey, you know, is there a way that we could incentivize not just somebody to leave a review, because that is great, but also like, how can we facilitate an actual referral? How do we make that, you know, easier for people? Because I believe that that's where we're going, you know, as we have this sort of shift. I think there's going to be revolutions and evolutions in various components of all businesses, right? But, you know, we're talking about the HVAC business where we kind of go away from, like you're saying, just this kind of pray and spray method of just like, let's just throw thousands, if not tens of thousands of dollars at, you know, Google, only to realize, well, that was a whole bunch of, you know, crummy leads. Like, where'd all my money go? I might as well just have, you know, lit it on fire and had fun, right? Instead, it's thinking really intentional and almost having these kind of like you're talking about with like becoming more of a specialist, maybe, and still maybe offering other services, but leading with your specialty allows you to hyper-target your SEO, your social media, your pay-per-click, and really focus on the jobs that you maybe, and it doesn't have to be necessarily profitable, but there are things that you can get knock out because you've already got the equipment, you've already got the technology, you've already got the know-how, and it's an easy way to differentiate yourself. And then you just make it known on the back end that like, hey, yeah, we install heat pumps and we're the only person in Massachusetts that does that. And we're part of the, you know, the Mass Save program or whatever the case may be, right? But, oh yeah, by the way, we can facilitate the rest of your HVAC system. Oh, well, that's awesome. You guys were great, you know, here. And so anyways, I think there's so many opportunities out there for these companies to really evolve into you know, very well orchestrated things.
Yeah. And, you know, I'm just thinking of an example, what you're talking about, you know how to do this thing and you just go out there and wing it. And then you expect somebody to follow and you have the same impact. There's a reason why pilots have that checklist before they put that airplane in the air. They're not going to miss a single thing. And if, you know, if we take advantage of these technologies and the CRMs and in, you know, like services like yours, they're going to get out there every time. And that's where the consistency comes from, is having that accountability in place, and technology can help. Good points.
Yeah. I love that you bring up the checklist. And I think there's a book called The Checklist Manifesto, and it talks about like the reason and the basis behind all this stuff. And, you know, I come from the Navy nuclear community. Right. So by the way, thank you for your service. I forgot that you
thank you for your service.
So I appreciate it. But just talking about the importance of those checklists. Right. And I mean, arguably we always joke that like a trained monkey could, you know, operate a nuclear reactor as long as it knew how to read and take action based off of what it read. And turn the right valves at the right time and all that kind of stuff. And so, but it's so important, although, you know, you do want to have the human element and you shouldn't be a robot. You know, you don't want your tech showing up with a book that says, you know, how to be human for dummies, right? Like that's not a good sign. Right. But I think, you know, showing up with a checklist to make sure that just in the back of their mind, they're hitting all those key points that you think are important. And eventually that will move through, you know, first where they were, you know, unconscious and incompetent of it. And then they're becoming, you know, conscious that they're incompetent. And then they're becoming consciously competent of what they're doing to the point where they get to that unconscious competence and they're really executing at that level. I think it's an exciting evolution. I think there's so much opportunity to move forward in a great way here. So
it is, it is.
Awesome. Well, Pete, we might have to continue this in another episode because I think we really started to get jamming there at the end on just some great ideas. And I think as everything unfolds, it might be good to kind of have you back on and kind of you've got your finger on the pulse of the landscape in a very sort of interesting way. So I appreciate that and you taking the time and sharing your wisdom. If people want to get in contact with you, I know you've got a variety of sort of different methods and modes that, you know, people can kind of engage. It's not always like a, you know, consulting mentorship kind of one-on-one thing, but you've got some great insight. How would somebody get in contact with you? What's the best way for them to kind of, you know, plug into what you got going on? Because hopefully from what you shared, they understand the value you'd bring to the table if they did.
Yeah. So a number of ways, HVACgreatness.com. I'm HVACgreatness@gmail.com. It's just Pete Ramsey on Facebook. You want to message me, HVAC Pete, you Google that. And that's my channel on YouTube. And you see me on there running my mouth just on various topics, but, any of those ways is fine. I don't have a structured, you know, landing page or anything like that. It's just Pete. I'm a small operation and I work very intimately one-on-one with, HVAC business owners. So
awesome. Well, thanks again, Pete. We really appreciate you showing up. For all our listeners, nobody nobody supports or sponsors this. This is, you know, all just industry experts coming together, sharing our insights for you. So if you wouldn't mind hitting the like notification, you know, subscribing, getting all that good stuff, and a review really obviously always helps. I, you know, only review though if you feel so inclined. We're not trying to push anything here, but it does mean a huge, huge impact for just our ability to expose more HVAC and plumbing company owners to a great podcast that I think and hope will continue to bring insight and valuable information regardless of the economy going up or down, but just continuing to protect your number one asset, which is your reputation in the marketplace. So thank you so much for showing up, and we look forward to continuing to bring more great content your way. Thank you.